Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Let's talk to Gabriel Krauss. Maybe he is going to be a little bit less esoteric. Gabriel, a very, very good morning. Gabriel is a writer and analyst at the Institute of Race Relations. So, of course, the looking at the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, that was a process in the 1990s. Was it meant to be the end of the story? Was it meant to bring us closure? What really has happened in this space? And how real a concern is this, given the fact that we are, there's also manipulation around race and relations and sometimes a desire to divide South Africans rather than unite us. Talking about non-esoteric, I mean, that was quite a heavy lead into it. Gabriel, good morning. I'm hoping you're well.
I'm doing good, Howard. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting time for the TRC, you know, a commission about the commission that has already been delayed, but the first testimony will come in November. There's one thing I want to say to start, which is that the TRC is sometimes accused of being toothless. And I just want to remind your listeners of something that the TRC commission found regarding Winnie Madikizela Mandela. They found, and I quote, that she was central to the establishment and formation of the Mandela Union Football Club, that club became, quote, a private vigilante unit operating around her and from her houses, that it was involved in, quote, criminal activities, including killing, torture, assaults, and arson. The commission finds that Mrs. Mandela was aware of the criminal activity and deliberately chose not to address the problems. I'm quoting directly. The commission finds that those who opposed her or dissented from her were branded as informers, then hunted down and killed. Their labeling as informers was deemed to justify these killings. And the last quote, the commission finds that Mrs. Winnie Madikizela Mandela politically and morally accountable and responsible for the gross violations of human rights committed by the Mandela Union Football Club. The commission was not toothless. It said very, very hard, important truths to the country. The National Prosecuting Authority should then have taken it up because she did not seek amnesty and they did not take it up for 20 years until she passed away. She remained a member of parliament. The TRC did good work and the NPA did not follow up. And South Africans now, especially in Joburg, have to drive down a road named after her, after all of that, which I refuse to call by her name. So the TRC deserves some credit, actually, for being pretty feisty when it comes to, you know, the First Lady and one of the most important figures in the ANC. That being said, the TRC did not do everything that it should have done. And, you know, I expect that some of the testimony that's going to come out is going to have to do, it's not just about race. I mean, it's going to have to do with hiding, with allowing some members of the apartheid state to get away with murder and some members of the ANC to get away with murder and deals that were struck to, you know, we'll turn one blind eye, you turn another blind eye. And let's both look away from everything.
I mean, I know that sounds terrible, but in a way, wasn't that an important bargain for South Africans to make? Because to some extent, maybe it needed to go on that, maybe these things needed to be spoken about, but to say, okay, you know, the perpetrators of apartheid, it was shocking, evil, etc. There was also poor behavior, really problematic behavior on the other side. If we can put these things aside, accept it, and move forward, we can build something strong and special. What was, yeah, was that not the underlying almost ethos of the TRC?
Yeah, I think the word you're missing there is truth, right? The deal was, if you tell the truth, you can get amnesty for all of your political crimes. Okay. So the people who told the truth and got amnesty, that's great. It was like, you know, there was a kind of civil war in this country. Apartheid was this kind of evil fascist system, and it kind of created a civil war environment. And actually, it was relatively bloodless. It was a kind of miracle rainbow revolution, but there was still some blood shed, and people who shed that blood for a political cause, both sides, tell the truth, you get amnesty. The problem is people not having to tell the truth and still getting de facto amnesty. And that, I think, is a kind of original sin of the new South Africa, where you get this idea that, like, because of the heavy stakes and because we kind of want to get over the past and go forward, let's just turn a blind eye and undermine the rule of law. Like, we'll say you tell the truth and then you go free. But actually, if you're powerful enough, you don't have to tell the truth and you'll still go free. And the, you know, the main party that was damaged by the DRC was the IFP. You know, if you look at who, which political party's representatives had the most amnesties denied and on the basis of incomplete evidence, and who got the most. So I think that it is a bizarre time for the TRC to be revisited now. I think that there are some things to look at there that will be important. But I think the is to try and learn the lesson that, like, whenever the moment comes that South Africa wants to really start growing again, it is going to depend on building trust. And building trust depends on sticking to your promises. So if you make a promise, this is the deal, you say the truth, you get the amnesty, then you stick to that promise. Going forward, if the deal is something different, whatever it is, you have to kind of stick to your promises. And that is, stick to your promises is kind of a layman's way of saying the rule of law. The rule of law is this big, fancy concept that lawyers and professors throw about. But all it really means is, like, if the law says you murder someone, you steal, you rape, these will be the consequences, it only really means something if that promise to uphold the law is kept by the police and the prosecuting authority and so on. And South Africa's got a big trust deficit problem. We see that in the data. We've got the lowest trust in public institutions in of polled countries in Africa. So we've got a big trust deficit problem.
Skeptical about why this is all happening now, because we know that the president's, what was it, national dialogue? I don't even know if it even happened, but there was that nonsense, this national dialogue, which is just a way to distract South Africans from some of the real issues like corruption and state capture that we should be dealing with. So when I hear that we're going back to this, it might be really important, but then my cynical brain says, hold on, why are we talking about this and not fixing our employment issues? Let's fix that, and then we'll find a lot less need to have these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that there is something troubling about the timing. I think that the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating. Let's see how the evidence is actually led. Let's see what consequences come from it. My guess is the consequences are not going to be there. You know, much like the Zondo Commission, I was unusually skeptical amongst people in the media, I think. From the beginning, I was like, I'm worried about the Zondo Commission. In the end, I think there was one very good thing about it, which is that it highlighted the problem of BEE premiums in the whole state capture network, which I think is an invaluable contribution. But in terms of prosecutions following up from it, it's been, you know, not good enough. And you can't fully blame that on the commission. It's not the chair of the commission's fault. It's not the evidence leading lawyer's fault. It's the NPA that comes afterwards' fault. So I want to take that skepticism and that cynicism and direct it right at the NPA, right at the police. Those are the guys who need to be following up on evidence that's already in the public domain that is very strong, prima facie evidence of guilt of massive offenses that has to be done, not just for this future commission that hasn't happened yet, but for the commissions that have already happened. And there's like a dozen of them at least, where you've just got cabinets full of evidence waiting to be turned into real prosecutions.
So who is the biggest culprit here? Is it the NPA? You've mentioned them a few times.
I think so. I think that that's sort of why I started with the story about what the original TRC said about Winnie Mandela. They had the evidence. They compiled the evidence. They gave the finding. They kind of took the political heat at the time so that the NPA could then go forward and be like, well, you know, we're not inventing this. There's like a very strong charge that's been made against her. And they didn't do it. And it wasn't one NPA. It was one after the next. And we're still sitting with that kind of toothless NPA problem. I remember when Shamila Batoy was appointed, there were a lot of Ramaphoria enthusiasts who said things are going to be different now.
Well, I was one of them. Don't judge me for it. I'm just a positive person. I really hoped it would be better.
Yeah, you got to hope. I think that's not a bad background attitude, but It is. And in fact, it's the kind of thing I'm saying about the trust deficit. We actually need South Africans to believe in South Africa, because if you don't report the crimes, if you fully give up on the system, then it certainly breaks. But we are being let down again and again by the NPA. I think that is the biggest problem when it comes to these kinds of issues of theft, murder, mass scale corruption. It really does come back to the NPA.
That's where we do need to leave it. Gabriel Krauss, thank you as always. Absolutely love these conversations because they are real and they give us tremendous insight. Thank you for that.